Hello, and welcome to Nerd Critic, a podcast about big movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is Jordan.
And I am CJ. Jordan here is our studied and credentialed and huge Star Wars nerd critic.
Truth. And CJ here is our resident nerd who is fine with Star Wars.
Exactly. I like it.
Who has, on record, no issues with Star Wars.
Yeah. It's there.
Yeah.
It's a thing. But we're not here for that kind of opinion. We're here for the passionate Star Wars fan.
Well, I'm expecting you to drum up at least a little bit of passion on this episode.
I absolutely will. Good. Because I recently rewatched this movie. And
meh.
And it's just okay. No. And I think that the haters gonna hate, and they're wrong.
Good.
Coming out swinging.
All right.
At the beginning.
I love it.
Yeah. So.
Here's the truth. I should have written a speech for this episode. I didn't. But, like, that's the level of my... I mean, I have been blue in the face over this movie,
yeah,
since it came out.
I mean, you came in and said, I have hours of things to say.
I do. I could talk about this movie all night long. I won't, and we won't, but that's where I'm coming from. So
we've been building this episode for a long time.
And we're still building it.
And it's
so let's stop and let's actually do it. Do we need to remind people of where we are and what we're doing?
Yeah. I mean, this is we are halfway through Star Wars Week. So pretty much everywhere that you go for Nerd Critic right now, if you go to nerdcriticpodcast.com, you're going to see Star Wars Week. If you all of our social platforms are Star Wars'd out, it's all over the place. Because we are really, really excited for, is it The Rise of Skywalker?
I believe so.
Or just Rise of Skywalker?
I believe it's The Rise,
The Rise of Skywalker. Yeah. We're really excited for the new installment to the Star Wars franchise. And so we've been doing a lot of stuff. Jordan here actually wrote an article that you can find on our blog on nerdcriticpodcast.com.
Yeah, it's not very good, but I did write it.
You emailed me and said, I think this is pretty good.
That was in the moment.
Oh, okay.
In retrospect, I don't think it's very good.
It just talks about all the stuff, all the Star Wars stuff,
it's
and how there's so many things.
Yeah, it's basically just a way to think about Star Wars fandom from the perspective of there just being so much Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
Also, we have a Star Wars giveaway going on.
Yeah.
So these are for our premium listeners. So people on Himalaya.com/nerdcritic. If you are a premium subscriber to Nerd Critic to the max, then you're automatically in the running for this Star Wars giveaway. It's a bunch of various Star Wars swag. We got some shirts, we've got some posters, we've got some socks, a bunch of stuff like that. So if you want to enter the drawing, then go become a Nerd Critic to the max subscriber on Himalaya.com.
Himalaya itself, I shouldn't even mention this because I want to win it. Himalaya itself is actually doing a giveaway right now. Do you know that?
Oh, are they? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're doing some kind of contest where you like their page or you share their stuff or you answer whatever. I don't know. Anyway.
It's the time of year for giveaways.
It is. They're doing like an Apple AirPods Pro giveaway, and I want those things.
Ooh,
so I'm
yeah.
entering. I'm
Dude, those are like
$300. I know.
Yeah.
So... this is a good time to try Himalaya out.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they're also doing like every day they're doing like a $75 Amazon gift card or whatever.
Nice.
So like,
also it'll just improve your podcast listening experience.
Himalaya is a good app.
It is a good app.
It's a good app.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not, we're not supposed to be doing ads for
I'm sorry.
Like right now.
I'm sorry. I'm just, it's all, it's, I wanted to let people know that we're doing a giveaway.
No, yeah, that you should know that.
That's a Star Wars giveaway. We got a Star Wars quiz about what color is your lightsaber on our website. We've got the episode before this one, this episode, and then on the 20th, we're going to release our Rise of Skywalker episode. So
when is the giveaway going to get announced? Probably next year, right?
It'll be when we come back from our little break.
Our first episode of 2020.
Yep.
We should save it for a bonus episode, but I really want to talk about how excited I am that it's going to be 2020. the year 2020.
Okay.
I guess that's all I have to say. I'm really excited about it being like just the year 2020. I feel like it's going to be a good year. I feel like it can't help it.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
Anyway, so Monday we released an episode about The Force Awakens. Today you are listening to an episode about The Last Jedi, Star Wars Episode 8. If you are confused about anything Star Wars related, go back and listen to The Force Awakens episode. We do a little bit of a primer on trying to get
all
you oriented
Star Wars.
About where we are in these movies. And then on Friday, the day of the official release of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, we are going to release a Nerd Critic episode about Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. So that's three episodes this week, all three movies. And that's
Merry
what
Christmas.
Looking for. Yeah, Merry Christmas. And a happy new Star Wars. Okay, so.
Let's talk about The Last Jedi.
It is time to talk about
18 months
this
in
movie.
The making.
Yes.
Okay. You ready?
Yes.
Okay.
I am ready.
Okay.
I'm ready. I have like a just an impossibly deep stack of things to talk about. I decided not to come prepared.
You're just gonna off the cuff.
If you just asked me to start talking, I could start talking. But what I want you to do, is tell me what you want me to start with or what you have to say.
Well, I would like to start with specifically above the line people, but specifically Rian Johnson.
Rian Johnson,
because he is the reason. So this movie, as we know, is divisive. We got a lot of people that love it. We got a lot of people that hate it. Very few in-betweens. It's like one or the other.
Yep.
And I think the reason that is because the person that made it, Rian Johnson made this movie.
Yep.
It's not a J.J. Abrams Star Wars movie.
It's not
George Lucas. It definitely does things differently. So I want you to talk about Rian Johnson a little bit. We did an episode on him.
Good,
if you want to know who he is, go back. But give me a little context.
Well, this is basically part three of our Rian Johnson trilogy.
Seriously.
Because we did an episode on him. And his movies pre-Star Wars The Last Jedi, and then we did an episode on Knives Out, which recently came out that he wrote and directed, and now we are doing this movie, which he also wrote and directed. And he had, I don't want to say he had carte blanche for this movie, but it was close.
Yeah.
They gave him a lot of creative freedom, and he used it. So my brief summary of Rian Johnson is that he is one of the best, if not the best, writers working in Hollywood right now, as a screenwriter, and then his skills as a writer translate directorially exceptionally well. He's very, very good at carrying through his vision of story into the director's chair so that what you end up with feels very much like a Rian Johnson movie. We talked in the Rian Johnson episode about how incredibly satisfying some of the payoffs are in his movies, where he's exceptionally good at setting things up and then paying them off in a way that just blindsides you and impresses you and you can't forget it. It's amazing. And I think that there's definitely some of that in The Last Jedi. Most of all, I want to reiterate my respect for him as a storyteller and as someone who is more committed to character and story than pretty much anything else. Like he doesn't pander. He just doesn't do it.
Yeah.
He says, what is the most important thing that I can do for this character? What is the most interesting or challenging thing that this character can go through? How can that work? And he makes it work. And that's the number one question. And I think a lot of writers and directors, storytellers ask that question, but I think few of them dig as deep and as successfully as Rian Johnson does when he is constructing narrative and character.
So let's talk about some of the risks that he took and some of the character-first kind of things that he did in The Last Jedi that made this movie stand out from the others.
Okay, well, let's just start with the proverbial elephant in the proverbial room.
Okay.
I guess we are literally in a room, but there is only figuratively an elephant in it. First of all, spoiler alert from this point forward.
Yeah.
That we're not going to be having any more conversation without spoiling things. So, one of the first things you see in this movie after the incredible first sequence, which I want to talk about a little bit in terms of humor, because we had a little bit of the humor conversation in the last episode.
Sure.
Poe comes back, delivers a lot more humor in the opening sequence, and a lot of people had some problems with it, which those people
again, go, probably the same people that had a problem with the
probably
first
the same
line.
People. Anyway, when we finally get to Ray, that just, I mean,
where the
was,
first one
if
left.
I was if I had tears in my eyes at any point during the Force Awakens, it was that last moment when Rey is holding up the lightsaber for. I mean, just let me be clear. I was there with you. I was definitely feeling that moment the way that all the other people who are deep fans of this franchise and love Luke Skywalker, I was feeling those feelings. I was there. And man, was I excited for what was going to happen next. So we get back to that moment, and she hands him the lightsaber, and he takes it, and he throws it over his shoulder, and he walks away. And people lost their minds.
Yeah.
They were not happy with that decision.
I mean, that's the – so I did some research to see – because – so I like The Last Jedi. You like The Last Jedi. And
correction. I love
you love The Last Jedi. And so I didn't want to just have a conversation where we were loving on it the whole time. And the people that are listening that hate it or just are those people just aren't represented.
Honestly, we want to respect you. We want to make sure that your side of the argument is somewhat represented.
Yes,
so
exactly.
CJ, explain why people hated that moment so
much. I actually dug on the internet and I found what I deem to be kind of the top three most common complaints.
Okay.
One of which is here. And I'm not going to go through them all right now. I will plug them in as we come across them.
Good.
It just happens to be that we came across this one. This is a quote from it's the Daily Wire website that kind of summed up everything for all the haters. And the writer was one of those haters. He says,
perfect.
Luke has retreated from the world, allowing the boy he badly trained run rampant, murdering millions while he sulks in self-pity and deconstructs the hope his character once embodied. His bizarre life on the island with his fish nuns and the alien sea cows comes off as pathetic and cowardly, not so much as the life of a monk trying to attain further spiritual enlightenment.
Well...
How does that make you feel? So that's
I just got
argument.
A thrill through my body because I have something concrete to respond to.
Okay, go.
I love this. So my first response is that's because he isn't a monk seeking greater enlightenment.
Totally.
He is not that. And the reason that moment is so good is because instantly we know that Luke has had some big problems and he has... And his character has changed. He's had some real issues, and he has not gotten past them yet. And so guess what? We now have a character that needs some things, like, badly. This is great, because if we had gotten there, and Luke was what everyone wanted him to be, which was just another Obi-Wan, basically. Everyone wanted Luke to be Obi-Wan. They wanted him to just be the guy that knew everything, and was going to teach Rey everything, and was going to come save the day, or at least, like, show Rey how to save the day, and, like, just, he was going to be essentially this salvific Jesus character who just was amazing. That's what everyone wanted Luke to be, because they watched the original trilogy, and by the end, he's a Jedi Master.
Because they love
Luke.
Cool.
You love him. And so you think, well, 30 years later, like, he's got to be, he's amazing, right? He's got to be amazing. But, so, as we already discussed in the first, in the Force Awakens, Han Solo's character was a broken guy, right? 35 years later, some things had happened, and certainly, I'm sure there were ways in which he had matured and become a more like a better person, but also in some ways he had become broken in some ways and needed a lot of help. Instantly, with that moment where Luke throws the lightsaber over his shoulder, we know so much that we need to know. We know that he is not the same person that we left 35 years ago. We know that he doesn't have any more respect for this thing that we all respect so much. And we also know that there's got to be... Well, because this is the beginning of the movie, presumably you're giving like at least a little bit of allowance to learn something new, to receive what's happening in the story. So if you don't immediately reject everything, you're going to start asking questions. Well, I wonder why he did that. I wonder why. Why does he seem so contemptuous of lightsabers and the Force and Jedis and this girl that he doesn't know who's trying to get him to come, clearly trying to invite him back? I mean, what is that? That's an invitation, right? She's holding out a lightsaber. Please come back and be a Jedi and save the day. We need you. Yeah. Like, one motion, we get that entire plea right there in one motion, and he takes it and he says, no thanks, I'm out of here. So great. So that's basically my whole response. Like, you, the people who got so upset with that moment wanted something very specific.
Yeah.
And they were given basically the opposite of that, and so they got really upset.
So I brought this up in the past, and it's one of the strengths of Rian Johnson. Rian Johnson doing the thing that he knows is going to be the best for the character because it's going to be the most interesting for the character.
Yep.
And not doing, like, not being afraid to hurt the character that you love, right?
Yep.
So if you kind of reevaluate, you know, if Luke Skywalker is human or some sort of I know it's in a galaxy far, far away, but you know, he's human. then this is a kid who is a farm boy whose aunt and uncle that kind of raised him died. He goes on this grand epic adventure, and then the previous time that we saw him, he just barely figured out who his dad is, finds out he's like Hitler, and then fights him, and then is about to die, and then his dad saves him, and then his dad dies in his arms.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. Don't care who you are. Don't care if you are the greatest hero ever. Don't care if you're Captain America. That crap's going to screw you up. You're going to have some issues with that. And one of the reasons that I love this movie and I love what they did with Luke was because there's this, like, I don't want to say plague. It was a really big issue for a long time, but it's the happily ever after
syndrome.
Thank you. The happily ever after syndrome, where it ends, where you went, kind of got through everything that was difficult for you, and you got your happy ending, and then you stop right there. Yep. Which is what the previous Star Wars did. It was like it did everything,
done.
And now it's done. But there's a next day.
Yeah.
Right. The princess is now married to a man, and they don't get along all the time. Sorry, but it's not – the Prince Charming is not always Prince Charming. Sometimes he's just a douche, and they don't get along. But we never see those days.
Yep.
The Last Jedi dives back in, and we get to see those days where there is a next day. Guess what? This is also a character that feels responsible for creating the next Darth Vader, and he doesn't know what the flip to do with it. He doesn't know what to do, so he just kind of runs away, which I don't blame him.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's way more interesting.
So this is the best thing about his character is that I don't think that his transition from being the character that we knew at the end of The Return of the Jedi to the beginning of The Last Jedi, I don't think that is out of character type. And this is why I love it so much. So, who is Luke? Luke is a smart, ambitious, cocky, like, hero, right? He is a guy who sees things sort of in black and white. And by the end of the Return of the Jedi, he was clearly the kind of person who had a ton of positive expectations for what was coming next, right? He founded a Jedi school, as we learn. And this is the other thing, as I really love, like, that first moment, if you're willing to be a little bit generous, it basically sets up a mystery. So for the rest of the movie, you're wondering how he got there. And little by little, in this wonderful course of revelation, you find out how he got there, and it's gorgeous. But anyway, it makes sense that somebody who has sort of, who has a tendency to be an all or nothing black or white type person, who if his perspective or his paradigm of the universe is proven wrong in some way, then he's going to flip to the other side. He's going to say, well, then all of it's wrong. I'm wrong. I'm part of the problem. The best thing I can possibly do is get out of the equation because the world, the universe is better off without people like me. So Is it an extreme response? Yes, but weren't all of Luke's responses extreme? That's his whole thing. Is that like, you know, you give him an inch and he takes a mile. He's gonna do the most extreme thing. He's gonna do the most drastic thing. And so when he when we are introduced to him and he's taking these sort of opposite perspective, this total recluse where he's, you know, totally removed himself, what that is essentially an opposing perspective from believing that he's the savior of the universe, which is what you have to believe. Well, this is going to be a controversial thing, but that's at least part of the way that you look at yourself if you found a Jedi school, you know? You're like, I'm going to start this religion again. I am the new prophet of this religion. I'm going to bring the Force back through the Jedi Order and save the universe and make sure that the happily ever after ending happens for everyone. And when it doesn't work, he goes to the other direction and says, I'm a monster. I'm the problem. I need to get out. So it makes perfect sense to me that I believe that line of logic, that character logic, is what motivated Rian Johnson to give us that version of Luke, who is farther progressed intellectually, spiritually, than the Luke that we left behind. He didn't regress. It's just that he didn't finish his arc. It's like he's gotten farther along his arc. What happens after blind optimism? Cynicism. What happens after cynicism? Wisdom. So what we get is that part where he's gotten some wisdom, but he's still a lot of blind optimism that gets interrupted pretty dramatically. And so he goes into cynicism. And then he lives in cynicism because he isolates himself and makes it so that nobody can teach him anything about actual wisdom until Rey shows up needing something. And then he has to learn the better part of wisdom. He has to show up. He has to grow up some more. He has to finish his arc. And what we get in The Last Jedi is Luke Skywalker finishing his arc in the most spectacular way possible. And that's the other thing that drives me nuts. Everyone wants to see Luke do something cool. Guess what? Luke did the coolest thing we've ever seen a Jedi do in the whole freaking franchise.
So the two rebuttals are, one, Luke didn't actually show up, so he's kind of a coward. And two, there are abilities of the Force that had never been seen before that they just wrote in as a plot convenience. Do you have a response to those?
Okay, first of all, the second part first, because it's the most silly and stupid. Every movie introduces stuff that the Force can do that we've never seen before. Okay. Every single movie. So you want to keep watching new Star Wars movies? You're going to keep seeing new stuff the Force can do. That's the way it works. Him not actually showing up. True, he didn't show up. Let's get back to storytelling 101 here. So if Luke is the hero of his version of the story, which he is, Luke is the hero of his story. So in his story, there needs to be a moment when an all is lost moment. What is the all is lost moment in this story, in this movie? Not the whole entire arc, but in this movie, the all is lost moment is when Rey says, I'm out of here. I'm going to do it without you because you're not helping. And when she finds out what happened, and when she finds out everything, and he still can't see past his own self-hatred at that point, because he does blame himself deeply, shamefully.
Yeah.
It's the reason he doesn't tell Rey what really happened. He's deeply ashamed. And shame, by the way, is the reason that people isolate. And shame, by the way, as we've discussed in previous episodes, is the biggest monster a person faces. So Luke is essentially he's underneath his own shame. He can't see past it. And so what does it take? Well, it takes Rey leaving. So ultimate failure, right? And then Yoda shows up because it's great. And Yoda in the most perfect. So Luke goes to burn the temple. He goes to burn the alcove of treasured Jedi texts.
Yeah.
Right. And why does he do that? Because it is the ultimate expression of despair. He hates himself. He hates the Force. He hates the Jedi Order because in his mind, he has failed again. He's failed ultimately.
Yeah.
Everything is ruined because his objective in his relationship with Rey was, in his mind, not accomplished because she's going to try to turn Kylo Ren, who he believes is ultimately evil. So he thinks he's failed with Rey. And he thinks he's failed. He failed with Kylo Ren. And so, and it's all his fault. Therefore, it's all the Force's fault. Not the Force's fault, but it's all the Jedi's fault because they've abused the Force. So in his shame-filled, rage-filled, self-contempt, you know, despair, he goes to burn the books, which is the epitome of, like, you know, it's the epitome of the expression of despair, is to burn the books, like, get rid of the whole thing. I hate them all. As he's going to do that, Yoda shows up and says, "Hey, what are you doing?" And yeah. Luke says, "I'm going to burn these books is what I'm doing." And Yoda's like, "All right, do it." He, like, calls his bluff. And Luke stands there having second thoughts because he realizes, I feel like maybe there's something I'm missing, you know? So he has this great character moment. And what does Yoda do? He's like, "Oh, gosh dang it.
I'll burn the books.
I'll burn the books for you." Yeah. It's so good. It's so good, CJ. And then there's this lovely moment that makes my wife cry every time we watch this movie and makes me cry a little bit too, when Yoda and Luke just talk. And Yoda explains, he basically delivers the final sort of components of what's missing from Luke's world perspective.
To turn the cynicism into wisdom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To alchemize Luke's experiences into real, true wisdom and unlock his true potential as a Jedi master, as a master in the sense of being a teacher, someone who can then go and actually deliver something of real value to the people who need him the most.
So is Luke a coward for not showing up?
Yes. Absolutely he is. He's a coward in the same way that everyone possessed by self-hatred is a coward. Mm. He truly believes that him showing up would make things worse, so he doesn't show up. He doesn't show up because he is afraid for his own life or afraid for his own happiness or afraid he's going to lose something. That's not the kind of cowardice we're talking about. We're talking about the cowardice that is self-fear. He's afraid that he is the problem. So if he shows up, things will get worse. That's what he truly believes. And that is what we see borne out by his actions and by the conversations he has with Rey and with Yoda all the way up until he finally gets it and it clicks for him. So, yeah, absolutely. Like, that is my long-winded defense of Luke Skywalker's character in this movie.
I think that's great. I was trying to figure out, because there's a lot of people that don't like this movie, and usually Luke is probably the number one biggest gripe. And so I found a quote that I loved in support of this movie that I think kind of sums up our issues with a lot of people's issues with Luke and why they are
wrong.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're wrong.
I didn't want to be that mean.
I don't want to. Here's the thing. Opinions can be wrong.
Sure.
I mean, they can be. And in this case, those opinions
are wrong.
Are wrong. They're based on very strong, committed expectations.
Yeah. 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 So it says, this is the quote. It's also nitpicks or genuine critiques notwithstanding about telling the original batch of Star Wars fans that the franchise is, they're talking about the movie in general, that the franchise, this franchise isn't necessarily for them anymore. It's rather for those who have been waiting on the sidelines, fans who weren't white men, or fans of all stripes young enough to have fallen for Star Wars through The Force Awakens or Star Wars Rebels. It's a weird contradiction in modern fandom with folks my age or older, you know, the middle-aged-ish, wanting new variations on beloved childhood pop culture icons, yet wanting those interpretations to appeal more to us than our kids. Basically, this deep desire, and it comes from genuine love of these iconic characters.
Absolutely.
To want more, but in the exact way that you want them.
Yep.
And the reality is that if these characters don't change, then there's no progress and you're doing nothing worth doing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing inventive. There's nothing new. So these characters are going to change. They're going to go through a lot of heartaches, which is hard to watch because you love them and you want them to just be happy and be every version of the hero that you want them to be. But that doesn't make an interesting story, and it wouldn't have made near of an interesting as interesting of story with The Last Jedi if Luke was just Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
So
if Luke was the hero.
Yeah. Oh, that was good. You did good. Oh, you did really you. Good defending Luke and the choices that Rian Johnson made.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You did really good at summarizing both sides of the fence. Good on you for looking up those really key quotes. I could go on and on about the representation thing too. I can't say it better, but I'm like wanting to reiterate it. Like this idea that so many people showed up to this movie wanting something very specific and ultimately very worthless for most people.
Yeah.
And also worthless for them. Because it's not helping you at all to just get exactly what you want either. It's not helping you at all. You're literally getting nothing from a story. If you go show up and the story is exactly what you were expecting, then you walk away with nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that The Force Awakens was kind of the closest version to that we could have gotten. We're back in this world, mm-hmm. and then The Last Jedi is now we're going to change things up.
Yep.
Because the world's going to be different, because the world is different.
Yes.
All right. Complaint. Here's the second complaint. And this one I get. This one I really genuinely get.
Well, don't preface it.
I'm gonna keep to the quotes so that there's representation of people that aren't you and I.
That's fair.
Finn and Rose's trip to the casino world.
Yes.
Which is prequel level silly, to get the master codebreaker, whom they don't find but did find sort of, and their harrowing mission onto the command ship all ends up being pointless.
Yes.
I understand that one. I'm curious what your response is. The whole Finn and Rose kind of arc or storyline or subplot. Why?
That's a thorny one. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack here. Let's together do our best to work through this. Okay. I'm not going to be able to do it by myself. So first of all, people didn't like Rose.
Yeah,
people didn't like her.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get the easy stuff out of the way first.
Okay.
First of all, there's some racism going on.
Sure.
And there's some sexism going on. And it's bad enough that she like left social media. Like,
yeah, it was that whole situation. Rough.
It's actually pretty despicable.
Yeah, it is.
So if you listener, and I don't think any of our listeners are part of that crowd. I don't think that they are. But if you are, you were deeply wrong. Like to take part in that conversation.
Yeah.
If they'll
be trolling us.
Yeah.
Right now.
And that's fine. but. Anybody who's making arguments based on any of that, like, and a lot of people weren't doing it openly, but there was like a lot of that motive.
Totally.
And that is
wrong.
Really unacceptable.
Very, very
absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
I find the actress who played Rose, Kelly Marie Tran. I find her to be very appealing. I think that she's a really interesting actress. I think she makes some interesting choices. I also think she was kind of a miscast for this part.
Sure.
I also don't love the way the part itself was written. I think that there was a little bit missing from it. I don't know where the disconnections are. It's really hard to unpack because for whatever reason, the comedy didn't land a lot of the time for me. There were things that just didn't quite fit together with that particular role, which was upsetting because I liked her and I really wanted it to work.
Yeah, yeah. I do think that we might need to take a step back and talk about Finn because I think there are two puzzle pieces that don't go together.
Part of the issue here is that Finn was rightfully one of the beloved characters from The Force Awakens.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, honestly, and the guy, John Boyega is an incredibly good actor
yeah.
who is very good at drama and very good at comedy, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Like he's,
yeah.
he was, I mean, honestly, like I think many of my favorite moments of The Force Awakens are John Boyega moments.
Yeah.
Like
Finn moments. Comedy moments with Finn.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It just absolutely, I mean, really, really on point. The guy's timing is amazing. He sells it so well and I feel for him and I really love his character. So justifiably, Finn was one of our favorites, and we wanted to see Finn in another movie
yeah.
about Star Wars, and we wanted to see Finn do cool stuff, and instead, he paired up with a character that people didn't like very much, for whatever reason, whether it was sort of the unacceptable sexism and racism, or whether it was something a little bit less charged and more just, like, not identifying with her, for whatever reason, they didn't like her very much, and not only that, but they sent him through a storyline that seemed to be purposeless.
Yeah.
So it's like they kind of got rid of his character.
It felt like Rian Johnson didn't know what to do with his character, so he wrote this. It was like a cul-de-sac that just ended up turning around and coming the
it
other
does.
Way.
It does feel that way. So I think that there are some really good defenses to be mounted for that storyline, for Rose, and for Finn being used in that way. I think that there are really good defenses, and I'm going to try to I'm going to try to deliver some of them. But I do want to acknowledge that out of all the movie, out of all of the things about this movie that people complained about, I think that the feelings of frustration with that entire storyline were the most
justified,
and justified.
Yeah.
However, I do think on rewatchings it starts to become a little bit more rewarding and feels more justified or feels more fitting to the overall plot. The first thing that I want to say is that Rian Johnson does care a lot about theme, and in this movie, one of the big themes was the gross nature of war itself. Like how sort of awful and pointless it often is to fight when maybe there's another alternative, and so we get a kind of like a sort of soapboxy axe grindy version of that in the casino run, which is I think why people rightfully had some people had some issues with it. I still have a little bit of an issue with how heavy handed that stuff was. But it also does an effective job at sort of like highlighting what this movie is kind of trying to be about, which is that the problem isn't necessarily that the Empire is evil or the First Order is evil. The problem is that the appetite for war essentially makes stuff worse for everyone, but then there are people who profit from that appetite and therefore contribute to the appetite. Like they essentially they become part of the problem in order to make profit. Yeah. And that is something, and there's an axe to grind there, and I think it's a good axe to grind because it's actually an incredibly accurate reflection of our actual world, where the most expensive thing in this world still is war making. Like it's yeah. like weapons and militaries, like that is the thing that we by far spend the most money on. And so and the thing that makes people really one of the things that makes people exceptionally wealthy. So there's a real reflection that Rian Johnson cares about. I think he cared about it a little bit too much, and so it got a little heavy, especially in that sequence.
Yeah, it's there's a time and space for that. He might have picked the wrong time and the wrong space
yeah.
in the Star Wars movie.
And I think there was also maybe a little bit of uneasiness that maybe people weren't going to get the point about like one of actually the themes that I like the best from The Last Jedi is a theme that is delivered verbally by Rose when she saves Finn's life from the laser cannon.
You're going to segue perfectly into what I was going to say. Continue.
Well, maybe I'll just let you say it then.
No, I want you to finish in case it's not the same thing.
Well, basically she says it's not about destroying the things we hate, it's about saving the things that we love. And that is one of the coolest themes that I can imagine for this kind of movie. A movie that is all about dark versus light and trying to destroy the darkness and save the light and like try to figure out. I mean, Star Wars has always been a very simple, moralistic tale. Like, we're not talking about a lot of shades of gray here. We're talking about good versus evil.
Light side, dark side.
Exactly. Yeah. But what we get in The Last Jedi, and what I would argue started in The Force Awakens with the decision to make Finn a stormtrooper, who's like, hang on a minute here. And then we are kind of like brought into the whole paradigm or the whole idea that maybe a lot of these stormtroopers are actually just orphans who were stolen from their families and forced into essentially military slavery, is a really compelling idea.
Yeah.
And adds some much needed shades of gray to this incredibly black and white storyline. So anyway, getting to the point where Rose is delivering that thematic line, I think is a really cool thing. The unfortunate thing, and I actually think that the moment where she says it is not bad. It actually, I think, is a fairly emotional, nice moment that's pretty well earned. But if you look at the motivation for doing the whole casino run thing was clearly to try to set that up as well.
Yeah.
So for her, it wasn't about, like, so Finn says, oh, it was so awesome to stick to those people and destroy the casino. And she's saying, well, no, it's awesome to save all those animals. And I'm thinking, cool.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it's a little soapy, it's a little sappy. But like, but the idea there is actually really great, and I think really important. And later on, it is delivered in I think a very compelling way.
So I'm glad that you finished, because that was not the perfect segue that I thought it was going to be.
Well, dang it.
But
now I'm disappointed.
I've thought a lot about the kind of the argument for Finn and Rose and Poe as well, and this is where I've landed when I try and think about the story and I try and think about the characters and what they've been through, and what Rian Johnson is trying to have them learn in the arc of The Last Jedi. There's kind of a four character kind of lesson that is being told. One side is Rose and Finn, and the other side is Poe and Admiral Holdo.
Yeah, it's,
Holdo. Mm-hmm. Laura Dern's character. So this idea that Finn is kind of all about himself, right? He's like, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to peace out. I'm trying to find Rey. I like her. She's cool. And then we're just going to leave because the First Order is going to win. No question. And then you have Rose, who is the exact opposite of that, right? Mm-hmm. Who had a sister that just sacrificed herself for this cause.
She just gave her life. Oh, by the way, can you hold on to that thought for a second?
Yeah.
And can we just, because this is, the opening sequence of this movie is so good.
Yeah.
From start to finish, I think it's basically perfect. And I love it in every way.
Yeah.
I think it is absolutely perfect. I think that it starts off with this immense, immense gravity where you see what's going on and you're feeling this, oh my gosh, the First Order's giant ships are about to obliterate the Resistance. Ah! And then Poe shows up and does the best comedic bit, I think, in the entire franchise. It's the funniest thing ever. And, I mean, really just amazingly funny. And then right into this crazy action sequence.
Crazy.
Amazing action sequence that concludes with a heart-rending sacrifice that, like, if you don't cry, you have no heart. And like that, like, and that is the opening sequence of this movie. Like, which, if you getting that right buys you a lot. Like, I was so,
on board.
So into it. Oh, anyway. That also then is the emotional foundation for meeting Rose.
Because the whole reason that they were successful was because Rose's sister sacrificed herself. Mm-hmm. So you have Finn, who is very selfish. You have Rose, who is very self-sacrificing for the greater good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then on the other side of the coin, we have Poe, and we have, how do you say it? Holdo.
Holdo. Yeah.
Holdo. Admiral Holdo. And you have Poe, who is in a very interesting way is very kind of self, he's worried about status. He gets demoted. And then Admiral Holdo is like, yeah, I think the last thing that she did was demote you. And he kind of takes that personally, and he thinks that he is right. And it's like he has kind of blinders on, right? Mm-hmm. And then Admiral Holdo has this greater plan that we eventually discover. And again, self-sacrificing. Mm-hmm. She sacrifices herself so that everybody else can get away.
Yep.
And so you have these characters that we are set up to love in The Force Awakens in Finn and Poe. And what we need to know is that they are the heroes that we think they are. We need to be truly invested in them as heroes. But you're right, like Poe is kind of the quick wit, like he can't just be the automatic hero that does everything right, is attractive, is fast talking, is the best pilot, is a leader. He has to have something that he's overcoming. And then Finn has to also learn that the resistance is something larger, that hope, if you will, is the most valuable thing. So when Rose stops him from sacrificing himself, she is basically helping teach him, right? Teach him that, no, it's not just about sacrificing like you or sacrificing the one person. This is a bigger picture. We all need to do this together. It's better that we're together and that you fight for what you want, not just what you fight against what you hate. And then on Poe's side, you have where he has to learn also that this is a larger picture, that you can't look at the immediate, that you have to consider everything, and you're going to have to be a leader for a lot of people, not just that one moment, that singular moment in time. So they learn kind of these parallel lessons, and I'm hoping and I'm thinking that those lessons are going to come into play in the next movie.
Yeah.
That it's going to be that Rey has learned some valuable lessons, Poe has learned some valuable lessons, and Finn has learned some valuable lessons, and it's going to be those three that we get to watch kind of become the ultimate trinity of hope in the next movie.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's what Rian Johnson was doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he certainly was trying to do that.
Yeah.
I would say he was successful by the end of The Last Jedi. He successfully did that. Whether or not it is carried out in The Rise of Skywalker is going to be up to J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
I think he'll do well, but we'll see. A couple more comments. The opening sequence was also the perfect establishment of that theme as well, about trying to save what you love and not destroying what you hate. The fact that Poe was so essentially went against orders to destroy the dreadnought, it was a mistake.
Yeah.
It was the wrong decision. He made the wrong decision. And the reason that you know it was the wrong decision is because later on you find out that it didn't actually save the fleet, the resistance. And they lost a bunch of their pilots and a bunch of their bombers, a bunch of the people who were making the resistance possible. They lost a bunch of them in the process of just trying to destroy this dreadnought. So basically, Poe, we see his weakness from the beginning. We
yeah.
know, oh, this guy, he's in it for the adventure. I mean, he has a good heart and he's committed to the cause and he's really good at what he does and he's really charismatic and he's got lots of great, great qualities and we love him for good reason. But also, he's distracted by those shiny hanging fruits
yeah.
of adventure and success. Let's take down the dreadnought. Like, it's worth any sacrifice. Let's just do it. Like, it's going to be amazing. And
which we all know those people. You
yeah.
know? We all know those people that are just like, they get really excited about something for like a couple months and then it just dies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Those
yeah.
people that are just like, yeah, woo, let's go, let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, and then his absolute refusal to step down and actually be, you know, and the thing is that you sympathize with him because you think, you see what he sees. And this is why it's so subversive. It's so lovely. Because you see what he sees, and so you think, well, of course, like he has to save the day.
Yeah.
And then you find out, you get to vicariously experience that moment of eating your humble pie and realizing you were wrong.
Yeah.
Like, he was wrong. He was wrong.
Yeah, there is a natural, I think everybody in movies talk about this stuff all the time, a stick it to the man kind
yeah,
of feeling.
Absolutely.
Everybody wants that. Everyone has that boss, that commander that they're trying to prove wrong. And so
yep.
you side with Poe immediately.
Yep.
Even though the person that he's ignoring is Princess Leia or
yep.
General Leia of all people.
Yep.
But you still side with him.
Yep.
And you learn the lessons that he learns
yep.
along the way.
Poe is a really And this is oh man, this bit here was so sophisticated, and people did not. So I was talking to a friend of mine about this movie a couple of months ago, and we're talking about some of the same things that you and I are talking about, the problems that people had and why they had them. And I brought up the question, why did people hate Laura Dern so much? Like, she was great. Her character was amazing. Like, yeah. It was a really powerful, important character and portrayal of this idea. And so I was asking him, I was like, you know, I mean, I kind of get some of this, some of the stuff, but, you know, it makes sense. Like, there's arguments, there's expectations, blah, blah, blah. Like, well, why do people hate Laura Dern so much? And he's like, dude, because she's a woman. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think he's right.
Yeah.
And like, you know, but I think he is, because think about it. Like, when the people who are most committed to Poe as a hero are probably the least inclined to accept orders from a female.
I mean, if you replace that character with a man,
he becomes the wise, heroic leader.
Yeah. Stoic, heroic. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, it sucks because once it's said, you're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If people hate her, that's mostly why.
Yeah,
because they're experiencing this movie from Poe's perspective, as they're meant to, and the thing is that Poe hates her for a while, and you also are looking at her and you're thinking, I don't know about her.
She's just a coward.
Yeah, she's a bureaucrat. Yeah. She doesn't know what she's doing. And then when you figure it out, you're supposed to have a paradigm shift. You're supposed to have a really big, important paradigm shift. And I think it was successful for a lot of people. But for the people that left the theater still hating Laura Dern and Admiral Holdo, they didn't get that paradigm shift.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
And it's not Rian Johnson's problem. It's their problem.
Yeah. So we're approaching an hour. I can make sure that they feel satisfied. I said that I had three complaints. I didn't read the third one. The third one was specifically about Poe, and Laura Dern's character.
Well, we're in it.
And so that we're crossing it right now. So yeah. I'll read it just for completion's sake. Please, let's hear it. For some reason, Johnson decided to portray Poe as an even more two-dimensional version of Maverick, whose every action in the film until the final retreat proves to be rash and counterproductive. Johnson also seems to go out of his way to repeatedly emasculate Poe. Ooh, this is interesting now that you're bringing this up. Emasculate Poe. He gets slapped by Leia, looks physically and intellectually small next to Laura Dern's Vice Admiral Holdo, and then gets knocked unconscious by the, quote, woke general after his pointless mutiny. I didn't even notice it before, but that shows sexism all over the place. Like that equaled out to,
first of all,
Laura Dern's a girl.
Yeah. First of all, Poe's actions made perfect sense for Poe the whole time.
Totally.
And in fact, you're on board with his actions. They make sense. You're terrified. You want something to be done. You can see the problem. You can see the corner they're in.
And you want his plan to work so he can prove her wrong. Of course
you do.
Yeah.
Because it seems like he's right. And it seems like she's wrong. Just like in real life, when you're wrong, you don't know you're wrong.
Yeah.
That's part of why it's called being wrong. We wouldn't be wrong if we knew we were wrong. We would be right.
Yeah.
So like, it's okay to be wrong. Anyway, I like that. And this is also sort of ties into the whole Finn and Rose thing. It dovetails actually really nicely with their whole journey being pointless. There's a reason for that. Rian Johnson didn't realize. I didn't want to use a double negative, but I couldn't help it. He didn't not realize that the Finn and Rose story was essentially a wasted effort, and in fact, made it worse for the Resistance.
Yeah.
Because the guy they brought back made a deal with the First Order to sell out the Resistance and to essentially
let them know that they were escaping.
Yeah, so to disrupt Holdo. Yeah, to essentially like to almost totally ruin Holdo's plan. Actually, to totally ruin it. She, like, the only way that she, you know. Anyway, that spectacular sequence, by the way, of her like
and just the silence.
Way that that was shot, like. Yeah. Last episode, I was thinking of that moment when I was thinking of moments that put a modern audience in a state of shock and awe. That was, yeah. The shock and awe in the theater when I watched this movie was palpable. Like, yeah. It was breathless silence. It was amazing. Yeah. It was beautiful. Anyway, so that whole storyline was worse than useless. They came back, they failed, they made things way worse. Which is part of the point of this story. The whole thing is about being wrong, learning, doing better, trying again.
Yeah.
It's about realizing that often you make things worse by trying to fix the problem.
Yeah.
And it's not that you shouldn't try. It's that this is the human condition. The human condition is that we want something really badly, and what we want is often right. It's like the good thing to want. I want to save my friends. I want to save myself. I want to make it so the bad guys aren't in charge.
Yeah.
We want good things, and we try really hard, but we do it with limited information and limited abilities and weaknesses, and as a result, often we'll end up making things worse,
yeah.
Which is the whole reason that Luke was in a place where he felt despair. Because he saw that. He saw it and understood it. And so for the whole movie, you get to see what he sees. Mm. You get to see that the very effort of trying to fix the problems often makes them worse. But you have to try anyway.
Yeah.
And so when he shows up, anyway.
Yeah. I love that that General Leia gives Poe, like, Poe isn't in the doghouse. Like, he did all of that wrong, but, like, we recognize his growth, and so does she, to the point that he's like, when they're in the cave and they're like, oh, he's like, come follow me. And they all look at her, and she's like, what? Why are you looking at me? Follow him. Like,
yeah.
Basically giving the permission and the torch over of like, no, he's leading you now. You need to, like, follow him. Right after he screwed everything up, but it's like the recognition of the lesson. Anyway, it's just a beautiful arc that landed. I'm glad that we talked this through, because now I like the Finn Rose stuff a little more now.
Yeah, no, well, I do think there are problems. I do think that it was a little bit misexecuted. Otherwise, it wouldn't take a little bit of effort to get on board with it. But I think that it is worth getting on board with that stuff. The last thing we really do have to talk about, we have to talk about Rey and Kylo Ren.
Oh, geez.
Fight. Everybody, anyway, okay. if people didn't expect this to be a long episode, then I don't know what to tell them.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay.
Also, they see the timestamp before it starts. Yeah, so I don't know why we're talking about it. They know exactly how long this is.
Rey and Kylo, their story, their arc, their relationship is, I'm going to go on record as saying, the best thing that the Star Wars franchise has given us, like, archetypally. Like, it is the best thing I have ever seen in any Star Wars movie. And I am so...
More than I Am Your Father, Luke, all that.
No, yeah. Absolutely. Because it's harder. It's harder. Mm. This is this relationship... The dynamic between Rey and Kylo Ren was so good and so powerful and so affecting and difficult and important that I just don't think that there is another relationship or dynamic or character arc that can beat it in this franchise.
So I agree, and I'm going to address another common complaint. And I think the way that you would, and that is Snoke's death.
Demise.
Very quick and just shocking.
Yeah.
Demise.
Unceremonious.
Very quick. So a lot of people have issue with that. I loved that because you know what that said to me? That said, he's not the person that we're supposed to be afraid of. The person that we're supposed to be afraid of is the guy that is riding the line between good and bad. The guy who can rationalize all of his bad behavior with this immature and frankly ridiculous, but like kind of understandable point of view on life because of what he's been through. Kylo Ren telling Rey, like, let's just start over. You and I, let's just wipe this clean. We don't have to deal with any of this. All of these previous movies that have happened, we don't have to deal with any of that. Let's just start over. And you look at him and you're like, that kind of makes sense.
There's a part of you, I would say a big part of you, at least for me this is true, a big part of you.
I was kind of all about that. Kind of
wants Rey to be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, cool. Screw the Skywalker family. Yeah. Let's just do our own thing. Let's do our own thing. And that is the person. Kylo Ren is the person that we're supposed to be terrified of. Because
he is the tragic villain.
And he's the gray. Right now, for me, he's kind of gray. Yes, he's irredeemable because he killed his father, blah, 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 blah. but also, he's like... Like, he kind of makes sense. Like, Darth Vader was this just basically a dictator, right? Like, we never really knew. It was just build stuff, blow stuff up. We never really had a full understanding. Kylo Ren is like, no, I had, like, the greatest hero in the universe train me, and he betrayed me. So the light side isn't always light, and I don't think the dark side is always dark. So let's come up with our own thing. And it's like, makes sense, but it's also kind of terrifying because he's not stable. He's a very immature baby. Anyway, I loved that little speech that they had, that he had to her.
And I want to then address the other big problem that people had with it, the big debate around Rey's heritage.
Oh, yeah.
So this is the big conversation around...
They have internet promo spots all around this. This is the big question.
This is a philosophical decision, and it is. I think this is a battle for the very soul of the franchise. Is who are Rey's parents? Yeah. And on the one side, on the easy, predictable side, you have, her parents must be someone we know.
Yeah.
It's got to be someone we know or
Obi-Wan's kid, Luke's kid.
Yeah, a forgotten niece, an illegitimate child. Like, she's got to be blood related to someone, capital I, important. Yeah. She has to be.
Yeah.
Otherwise, where's she coming from? Who cares about her? Yeah. Right? So, okay. First of all... To build drama on top of a story by making everybody related to each other is easy. That is the classic royalty aristocratic mode of storytelling.
Yeah,
it's what we inherited from the aristocracies of the old world, where all the important stuff happened to the people who came from the important families. Mm-hmm. If you didn't come from royalty, you did not matter. Not like figuratively, but like literally. Yeah. You didn't wind up in history books. You didn't get to make any decisions about what happened in the state. You didn't matter. You were a hand on the field, or you were a blacksmith, or you were somebody who had zero impact on the course of history. The people who made history were the people who were born in royal families. So we inherited that. That's our Western heritage from European cultures thousands of years old. And it's the way most of human history worked. The thing is that the American tradition, even though we still struggle with that, we still struggle with classes, and we still struggle with the fact that, like, it's very, very challenging for someone who comes from nothing, from no one, to make a real difference. But it does happen. And it happens a lot more now than it ever had.
Yeah.
Because we have been trying so hard to change our worldview. And so insofar as Star Wars, George Lucas... never really understood that. George Lucas thought, that makes sense. Yeah. Like, you want more drama? Everybody, it becomes royal families. It's all about big families making big decisions because it felt natural to him. Natural to him because it's the storytelling heritage that we all share. However, it's not the only perspective, and it's actually not a good perspective anymore. Like, it's something we need to break out of. And a lot of the most powerful American stories are the ones that have broken out of that mold and have shown the rags to riches story. The rags to riches story is the one that we love the most as Americans, because it reaffirms our ideal that anybody, even somebody that came from nothing, can make a big difference in the culture that surrounds them. That's a really important idea. It's a really important idea that should be reinforced over and over and over again. People need to keep believing in that idea. It's critical, because if you don't believe in that idea, then you give up. And if you're from nothing, you just give up. You're like, well, my decisions don't matter. My vote doesn't count. My dollar doesn't count. Nothing I do matters. What I create doesn't matter. If that's what you believe, then that's how you'll live. And so it is really, really important that we get away from that. And The Last Jedi does more to get away from that by treating Rey's story that way than any movie in the franchise does. Anyway,
and partially because Kylo Ren uses that to attack Rey.
Oh, it is. So the highest dramatic moment of the movie is because Rey is the main character of this movie and the last. She is the Luke Skywalker of this franchise, of this trilogy. So Rey is the most important hero, and Kylo Ren, because Snoke doesn't matter, is the most important villain. And so in the climactic moment between the most important hero and the most important villain, after that amazing lightsaber fight.
Oh my gosh.
Which is just what we've all been waiting for.
Yeah.
So great. Also that they fight together and it's just absolutely glorious. You just can't get enough of it. You're just screaming. It's amazing. And then it ends with one of the coolest freaking lightsaber moves. Punches a hole in the guy's head by turning on the lightsaber. Just everything about that scene is just so delicious.
And just anyway, so beautiful.
And so after that climactic, ecstatic climax of conflict, where you think, oh my gosh, Kylo Ren is now on Rey's side. Like, this is what we were hoping for the most. Like, oh my gosh. And then that the moment of greatest trial for Rey is when this thing, everything she wants seems to be there with her, that she has it. She's accomplished what she most wanted. She passed the test. It's all going her way. They can save the resistance. And then he says, let's not.
Yeah.
And there's that whole whole sequence. So the moment that matters the most, and Rian Johnson in interviews has compared the "your parents are nothing" line to "Luke, I am your father." Mm. And it is. It's the same moment. It's just inverted. And it is the same moment because in The Empire Strikes Back, that is the climactic moment. That is the moment of greatest trial, is when Luke has to acknowledge that the villain of the entire universe is his father. It's the hardest thing that Luke could possibly have heard in that moment, and had the greatest chance of destroying him as a person, as a character, of ruining the hero, of making him fall. And then he literally fell. Anyway, for Rey, the hardest thing that she can hear is that her parents are nothing. And that therefore the thing that orphans fear most, that your parents didn't love you, is true.
Yeah.
Your parents didn't love you enough to hold on to you, and they're gone now. That's it. That's your reality. The fact that he forces her to say it and like to acknowledge its truth, the people who think that Kylo Ren was lying, and that hope that he was lying so that she can be from, those people are missing the point. Mm-hmm. And also, if it ends up not being true, if it's retconned in The Rise of Skywalker, then that moment is not nearly as powerful.
Yeah.
It can only be powerful if it is true. It's like Darth Vader lying to Luke about being his father. I am your father. And like, you find out that he wasn't really his father, and you're like, good move, Darth Vader. Yeah. Like, way to mess with his head. Like, if it's not true, then it robs a lot of power from that moment. So it is so critical. And then, of course, at the very end, we see the orphan boy, the sort of child labor kid force pull a broom to him and then look up at the at the stars with a, you know,
trying, silhouette looks like,
yeah, pretending he's holding a lightsaber.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that is the story that matters most about Star Wars. Yeah. The story of everyone mattering.
It's the spark that will light the fire, yeah. Right? It's it could be anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that it could be anybody matters so much. And the people who reject that, who refuse to accept it or complain that it's bad or wrong, are essentially denying that they are robbing the franchise or that movie of its value, and they are saying the people who don't come from royalty in some way, whether it's wealth or class or whatever, really don't matter.
Which that would be a bummer. I know that there are people that say that, but I wanted to close with a
we can't close.
We're closing. we're around the closing.
Dad!
We're kind of going downhill towards the close. But it's the last quote I'll read. I'm sorry, I've read like five quotes today.
No, please.
The last quote that I'll read.
I brought zero quotes, so I'm glad you brought five.
That I think is kind of sums it all up. That sums up my feelings towards this. Why people love it and some people hate it, and why it's kind of divisive. If the Star Wars Awakens was about giving Star Wars fans Star Wars back to the fans, then The Last Jedi was a pass the torch installment that argued that old school IP is only worthy of continuation if it does something different and goes somewhere new. That's kind of the last thought that I wanted to put an exclamation point with, is this idea that if The Last Jedi came out, so if The Force Awakens was A New Hope and The Last Jedi was just like Empire Strikes Back, like, what are we doing? You know, like, why are we here if that's the case?
Yep.
But the fact that it does challenge you, that it does make you feel kind of uncomfortable, that not all of the outcomes are exactly what you wanted it to be, but you get to learn something and be satisfied at the end. That is why this movie is so good, even though there are haters that will always hate.
Amen. Man, I got to tell you, man, I really don't want to end this episode.
I know there's more to talk about, but you know what? If you want to keep talking, keep talking. I don't want to rob you.
No, that's really generous.
I know that
right now, more than any other time, excuse me, more than at any other time while we've been recording, I wish we were recording live so that we could take calls now.
Oh, totally.
What I want. I want people to come argue with me.
Yeah.
I'm like all prime. I'm like, I
good to go.
We can have these conversations. I can prove you wrong.
I can acknowledge
your point.
We can throw that out there because we did cover some of the big ones, but I know that there are people listening that probably didn't like The Last Jedi. So if there were things that we missed,
mm-hmm.
Or follow-ups then you should comment on Facebook. There will be a Last Jedi post. It'll be a new episode, and it'll be a picture of the red lightsaber, like the whole red. They fight the red guys, because, I mean, what's more beautiful in that movie than that image? Comment on the things that we missed, the arguments that you have, we'll either bring it up on the episode, or we'll respond on Facebook. I want them to be able to make their points known.
I have a big announcement.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh.
I figure this is as good a time as any.
Uh-oh. Okay.
This is probably the best time I could make this announcement. And you already know what it is.
Oh, do I?
I now have an email.
Oh, you do?
That people can email.
It's true.
That is associated with this podcast. And it is jordan@realcontender.com.
Real complicated, that is one.
Jordan. If you are one of those Nazis who think that Jordan can be spelled with an O, please don't bother emailing me. jordan@realcontender.com.
Yeah.
So feel free to email your hate at me.
Yeah, that's
fine. If you have hate about this episode, it probably belongs to me. So email me, not
PJ. That's probably true. I mean, you can email me if you want. I'll probably just forward it to Jordan.
And then you'll get a response from Jordan at realcontender.com.
Exactly. I think is that satisfying enough for you?
I guess, man.
That the conversation will continue in it through a different space.
It will. Okay. It will. This is a movie. I believe that and the last thing I'll say is that I think that there's a good chance that The Last Jedi will stand the test of time and become regarded similarly to this trilogy as The Empire Strikes Back was regarded in the original trilogy, which at the time got kind of mixed reviews. There were people who were not on board with The Empire Strikes Back.
It happens a lot. It does. With critically acclaimed movies.
Yes, and now obviously it is one of the it is the epitome of the great sequel, the sequel that is better than the original, and we now have, I believe, in The Last Jedi, something that is worthy of that same kind of a regard in its relationship to this trilogy. So I'm also hopeful just to set up for 2 days from now.
Yeah, it's Friday.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm also hopeful that The Rise of Skywalker ends up being a stronger film in many ways than the Return of the Jedi. Even if it's not, like, The Return of the Jedi had its problems, and if The Rise of Skywalker does too, it's okay. It's all going to be okay.
The reality is we get more Star Wars.
We get more Star Wars no matter what, which is awesome.
So join us on Friday for our Rise of Skywalker episode. And just so that we're aware, that will be a spoiler full. It's going to come out the day that the movie comes out, so a bunch of you might not have seen it yet. But we are not going to hold back. It's there for you to listen to as a follow-up and a continuation of your Star Wars love. Another hour of content.
Yeah. And just for the last... the last line, I don't know if I can clip this audio and put it in, so I'm not gonna promise that. But I want you guys to all remember Kylo Ren and General Hux, played by Domhnall Gleeson, in the room after Rey has left, and Snoke is dead on the floor, and Domhnall Gleeson General Hux is losing his mind and screaming about how they can't do anything now because what are they gonna do? And Kylo Ren spins around and says, "The Supreme Leader is dead," while force gripping General Hux's throat. And then General Hux gasping out, "Long live the Supreme Leader!" Which is how I feel about this franchise.
It's great. It's great.
Thank
you, Michael Bonmiller, for the wonderful music.
Yes. And please, everyone, remember to love movies like a nerd and respect them like a critic.
And cut.